For those of you who don't know me, I'm from the Ottawa congregation, Kenny Morton. I was approached about a month ago, maybe a little more than that, to offer a lesson up here at your meeting. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to come and offer this brief words of, I guess we call it semi-wisdom. My topic was my walk of faith or my walk with Christ. And in this walk, which I've gone through, I've been given the topic of talking about my life with Christ and following kind of the example of Solomon as he offered words of wisdom and insight, sharing his experiences, life experiences with his son. And they asked me to share some of my experiences with you, share some of my thoughts. I don't have the wisdom of Solomon. I'm going to encourage you to look into the book of Proverbs and the book of Ecclesiastes and read and study those words, and you'll probably get a lot more wisdom than what I'm able to offer you. Just as an insight, there was a little bit of confusion. I've got a son which probably more of you maybe know, Kevin, my son Kevin Morton, than you know of me. But there was a little bit of confusion. They were looking for someone to speak, and I guess there was a little confusion. And then Kevin was approached to offer this lesson, and then that confusion was, I guess, somewhat resolved. And Jeremy called me and was talking to me about offering this lesson, and I'm, you know, kind of confused. Well, what are you talking about? You know, and he says, well, haven't they talked to you about speaking for us? And I don't know anything about it. And so he says, well, let me get this thing straightened out. Let me see what's going on. I'll get back with you. Well, my son Kevin, who had been approached to speak, but they wanted somebody that was an old fogey to talk. So they canceled Kevin and come to me. I guess they thought maybe I'd had more bad experiences or good experiences to share. But anyway, we're going to do our best. And like I say, I don't have the wisdom of Solomon, but we're going to do what we can. I guess I'm just going to give you kind of some snippets. That's what Solomon did in the Proverbs, if you're familiar with that. And I'm going to talk to you about several different things. The first thing I want you to realize, and this is geared more towards the younger ones, the ones who haven't yet got maybe involved in the workforce or maybe are just beginning that part of their life. And our world tends to measure success by how much money you make, desirable a job is based on the salary that it pays. And I want to tell you that being rich or having a large paycheck, that has very little to do with your success in your life. It has very little to do with it. So weigh that when you have an opportunity to get out and start a career. I'm not saying money's not important. I'm just saying it has very little to do with your success as a Christian, especially. You know, Jesus taught about how difficult it was for a rich man to enter into heaven. You want to think about that. You know, when you take a high-paying job, there's a lot of responsibilities, there's a lot of time challenges involved, there's distractions, there's things that pull you away. Or can pull you away, let's put it that way. And he said it's difficult for a rich man to enter into heaven. So realize that your success as a Christian has very little to do with your paycheck. It's not that it's impossible. It's just difficult. So you can have a wealthy father, a wealthy son, wealthy daughter. They can have a challenging job and one that pays well, And if they can handle that and balance it and keep their party right, that's great. That's great. With God, all things are possible. So if you're with God, you're going to be fine. But just realize that that's not the measuring stick that you need to use exclusively to have a successful life. The Christian life takes a lot of effort. Most anything that's of value does, doesn't it? Yeah, if you want to be successful, you're going to have to put some effort into it. And the Christian life is the same. It's described as being like you're training for a race. Well, if you're an athlete like Flint was mentioning, they've been doing a lot of training. They've devoted a lot of time and a lot of energy to get to the level that they're at. And as a Christian, you're going to have to devote a lot of time and a lot of training, a lot of study and a lot of effort to be successful. But it's worth it. It's worth it. In the 7th chapter of Romans, I think it's been alluded to a couple times today, but in the 7th chapter of Romans, Paul talks about the things that he would really desire to do as a Christian. He finds himself coming short, having a constant battle between the flesh and the spirit. Romans 7:15, "For that which I do, I allow not." That's not what I want to be doing. "For what I would," the things that I really want to be doing, I don't do those things. "But what I hate, that I do." That ever happened to you in your life? Things that you know you should be doing, you want to be doing, and you find yourself not getting it done? Or you catch yourself doing something that, man, what in the world am I doing? What am I doing? The Christian life takes effort. Jesus is a way that we can be delivered from those things. Paul says, I'm in this constant battle. I'm in this struggle, and I have all these difficulties, and I get distracted, and I sin. But who can deliver me? Jesus. Jesus can deliver you. He'll take you through it. You just stay close to Him, and you'll be just fine. Can we continue in sin because we've got Jesus there to pick us up? Can we use that as an excuse? No, we can't do that. No, obviously not. So, temper your life. Study. Put forth the effort that it takes to be successful. You're not going to be a successful athlete if you don't train. You're not going to be a successful Christian if you don't study, if you don't practice, if you don't live it. It's just not going to happen. A lot of times we as Christians are kind of put out there on I don't want to say a pedestal, but we're put out there in full view of everybody. Our lives are in full view. We profess to be a Christian. We profess to be a righteous person. We profess to try and do what's right, to be a righteous person. And then, like Paul, we find ourselves doing something we shouldn't do. But the trouble is, a lot of times it's not us that finds us doing something we shouldn't do. It's somebody else. It's somebody out there in the world. And they said, "What are you doing, Kenny? Well, I thought you were with the church. What are you thinking? What are you doing?" In order to have respect as a Christian, you've got to be respectable. People do judge a book by its cover. You go into the library and you pick out a book. You're going to look at the title of that book. Or maybe it's going to be something out where you're going to see the picture on the front that catches your eye, a magazine that you an article that's interesting. You see a headline on the newspaper. People do judge a book by its cover, and they're going to judge you. They're going to look at you. Now, I'm not saying be a respecter of persons. I'm not saying that at all. Jesus teaches directly against that. But if you want to be respected as a Christian, if you want to be respected as a person, you need to dress respectably. You need to act respectable. You need to be respectable. Okay, young people. We're talking about respect. When you are of the age that you begin to date or get to entertaining thoughts of the opposite sex, respect plays a tremendous role in that, or should play a tremendous role in that. You want to respect that girl, or you certainly want to respect that guy when you're thinking about dating or picking a mate. Don't settle for a mate that's going to have diametrically opposed values. Man, that's a good-looking gal. Boy, is she sweet. All right. I'd like to date her. And you don't know anything about her. Or the other way around. And that guy's, he's all right. He's got nice curly hair. I used to have curly hair. You're judging a book by its cover. Told you it happens. Okay? Don't settle for a mate that doesn't have the same values that you have. Don't settle for someone that's doesn't have the same thought process that you have, same values that you have. If you want to go to heaven as a Christian, choose a mate that's going to help you get there. Choose a date that's going to help you. Don't be out running around with somebody that you know doesn't share your values. Don't even give them the time of day. Whether it's a guy that you just can't hardly take your eyes off of, or a gal that's that way, make sure they've got the same values that you have. And if they don't give them the time of day, because they're not going to help you get to where you want to go. They're not going to get you there. Now, I'm not saying that's impossible. I'm just saying it's going to be hard. It's going to be harder for you. I'm going to give you some advice that makes things easier for you if you can. Yeah, there's good people out there in the world. I'm not saying that you have to marry somebody that's in the church right now. I'm saying you need to look for somebody that has good values, that appreciates and respects you, and doesn't try and belittle you, doesn't try and take advantage of you, doesn't try and get you to do things that you shouldn't be doing as a Christian. Look for somebody who's got the same values. And don't even bother dating, let alone mating with someone who doesn't have your values. You want to go to heaven? Get somebody who will help you get there. We had a lesson earlier about two people, one picking up the other. Or maybe I'm thinking of our lesson last week at home. But anyway, it's a good point. Two are better than one. So a good mate can help you an awful lot. But if you've got a ball and chain dragging along your ankle, that's not gonna help you at all. Okay? Look for somebody that's has the same values as you. If you want to go to heaven, get somebody who'll help you get there. How about your children? If you're gonna have children, you want them to go to heaven? There's only two places they can go. They can either go to heaven or they can go to hell. You pick the wrong mate, that's very possibly where your children will go. In the wrong direction. Pick somebody who will help you have a successful life. Pick yourself somebody who will help your children to have a successful life. To be able to get to go to heaven. The other place isn't nowhere we want to be. Don't fail to attend the services of the church. You know, I've heard a lot of people over the years talk about, well, you know, there's a lot of people in the churches that aren't going to make it into heaven. Well, that's probably true. That's probably true because not everybody that's in that attends services of the church, not everybody that attends the services of this church, of this congregation, may go to heaven. But if they're living the Christian life and if they're studying the Word and they're doing the best they can do, the Lord is going to make up the difference. And you will go to heaven. Don't fail to attend the service of the church because somebody's out here saying, well, I can serve the Lord out here. I can serve the Lord just fine out here on the golf course. I appreciate who He is and all that. I can go fishing. I can go camping this weekend and I can serve the Lord there. Well, yeah, you can serve the Lord there. And you should serve the Lord there, just like you ought to be serving when you're at work, or when you're home sleeping, or when you're raising your kids, or mowing your yard, or whatever. You ought to be serving the Lord. But worship Him in the church with your brethren. And even if you can get along without that worship, what about your brother? What about him? How can you encourage him while you're out here? No. Can you lift him up? Can you help him on his way to heaven? No. It's not all about you. Don't fail to attend the services of the church. Let's go on. Opportunities knocking. I think it's maybe Toyota. I think maybe Toyota has an ad, opportunities knocking. Every fall or sometime during the year, they have this big Toyota sell-a-thon. An opportunity is knocking for you to come in and buy this Toyota at a bargain price. And I'm not sure if it's a bargain or not. I never went and looked, but anyway, opportunity is knocking. Well, opportunity is knocking for each and every one of you. Every day of your life, opportunities are going to present themselves to you. If you're young people, probably more opportunities than others. You have an opportunity to go to kindergarten and you can get this modeling clay and you can play with it and you can have a good time. You get educated, you go through high school, you score all the high on those SATs, and boy, you've got an opportunity to go to some prestigious school and really get a great education and all these things. You can get scholarships to help you pay for your parents pay for your education, or help yourself pay for your education. I'm not gonna say some of you aren't quite capable of paying for your own way. If your parents can help you, that's great. If they can't, then that's understandable. Times are tough. But anyway, opportunity's knocking. You've got this scholarship. And you've gone to this prestigious school, and you've become well-educated in your field, and you've got this great opportunity for a dream job. You know, I didn't go to college. I went to high school, and I graduated, and I had an opportunity for a scholarship, but no, I want to go to work. I'm tired of school. I want to go to work. Anyway, I had this dream job come along, opportunity to go overseas and make a lot of money. Just a short-term deal. It's only for a couple, 3 months, and I can go over there and make a lot of money, and I'll get to go overseas. You're talking to a high school graduate that, you know, he's working for $3 an hour, making big money, and he's got this opportunity to go overseas. They're going to pay my way over there. They're going to feed me. They're going to give me a place to stay. They're going to give me a job. I'm going to make all this big money. Great opportunity, dream job. But I've been married for 10 months at that time. I'm leaving my new bride that caught my eye, and we got together and had a good 10 months. And I've got this great opportunity to go over here overseas and enjoy this job. And all I'm thinking about is it's a money. It's an opportunity to go overseas. I can only be gone for 2 or 3 months. It's not like I have to sign up for a year. What could be better? But that's all I'm thinking about. I'm not thinking about, well, how is this going to affect my family? How is this going to affect my ability to work in the church, to meet with the brethren, to serve the Lord, to do the other things that I ought to be doing? I'm not thinking about any of that. I'm thinking about, man, this is a dream job. I'm going. Yeah, let's go. So I go. Yeah, it wasn't such a dream job. I got over there and I'm in the middle of a desert, nothing but sand. My food was, it was adequate. It wasn't great, and I'm kind of a picky eater, so I kind of pick choose. My fabulous living facilities was about a 30-foot trailer that was divided into three cubicles, about 10 by 10 each. In that 10 by 10 cubicle, there was two bunks, so two people shared that 10 by 10 cubicle. There was nothing in there but the bunks. You go across the desert here about 100 yards to the shower house. Okay, and then you come back after a hard day's work, and you take this, you get your stuff, and you run over here to the shower house, you get your shower, and you go back to your trailer, and you wait for your buddy to get there, because if you open the door, 50 flies are going to fly in there before you can get in and close it. So you don't want two people opening it twice. Okay? You go in there and you swap flies with your towel for, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, so you can sleep. Okay? It was a dream job. Anyway, needless to say, when they asked me to extend my stay over there and stay for a little longer, past what my contract was signed for, I didn't do it. I went home. I got home in time for my first anniversary by about a day. Okay, so anyway, dream jobs aren't always what they seem to be. And even if they are what they seem to be, if it had been a great job, which it wasn't. But if it had been a great job, I didn't make near enough consideration about what I was giving up, what the cost was for that job. Consider the cost. Consider what it's costing you to take those jobs. Okay. Now I'm back home. And I'm thinking about raising my kids and doing a little better job of that. My kids aren't, at this time it's just Will and I. I didn't desert my kids to go over there. I'm not that foolish. Just about, but not quite. Anyway, a few years later, I'm raising my children. And I want you to encourage you to raise your children fit in the Lord. I want you to encourage your daughters to be women that are becoming to righteousness. I want you to raise your daughters to have respect for themselves. I don't get it. I don't know why so many of these girls they have such low self esteem. They just think that that I'm just not good. This other girl's so much sweeter than me. She's so much better looking than me. I got so many flaws. Nobody likes me. I don't get it. I really don't, girls. You're all great looking to me. I mean, now I know you don't care whether you think I'm. I know you don't care. You can care less whether I think you're pretty or not, but you are. And I just don't understand why these girls have such low self-esteem. I guess maybe it's, but I don't care what people tell you or how they treat you. Well, I care, but. But don't allow that to cause you to think that you're not great. You're not great. Don't allow them to belittle you that way. Parents, do your best to raise your daughters righteous in the Lord. And I can't imagine a person who has the understanding that they're righteous in the Lord not having high self-esteem. If you're right with the Lord, who cares if you're right with anybody else? If you're right with the Lord, I don't care. You shouldn't care. If you're right with the Lord, the Lord's gonna take care of you. He's going to bless you. Raise your sons to respect you, respect anyone around them. Raise your sons to understand the importance of being respected and living a respectable life. Raise your sons to understand the importance of developing themselves to be men who can serve the Lord, men who can assist in the work of the congregation, men who can become officers in the congregation. You know, there's so many people that do like I did. They didn't think about what they're doing, about what's happened in their life. And they pay consequences for that. You know, we've got a lot of good men in the church today that aren't qualified to hold office because of the things in their past their life, in their past life. They aren't qualified. They're good men. They're men who are capable teachers, but they're not officer material because of their past life. Think about that when you're raising your kids. Kids, think about that when you're going through the decisions that you're going to make. Is this something that's going to make me right with the Lord, or is this something that's going to take me away? Another issue that kind of comes up sometimes, I just remember where I saw that two are better than one. We were at a wedding last night. That's where it comes up. Okay. This also came up. Genesis, the second chapter, talking about when God brought Adam and Eve together. And he talked about the purpose of marriage. And he talked about how that a woman should leave her parents and cleave to her husband. And talks about that marriage relationship, the practice of leaving the family you grew up in and establishing your own family. Sometimes that gets to be kind of a touchy situation, a difficult situation. And if that's the case with you, where you're having a difficult time leaving your family, and I'm not saying desert them. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying sometimes grandparents, you need to step up parents, when you have a child who has found a mate, sometimes we need to just take a step back. You know, it's sometimes it's hard to let go. You know, you want to help them. You want to do. Let them do. Grandparents, you're just that. You are grandparents, but, you know, if you've done your job as a parent, your kids are going to do their job as a parent. You don't have to continue on. You don't have to jump in and say, well, here, let me tell you how you ought to raise this son. Or let me tell you how you ought to do this. Let the parents be the parents. Let them do that. You're going to have a lot more peaceful relationship with your son or daughter, and you're going to have a lot more peaceful relationship with your grandkids. And if you've raised your kids right, they'll do just fine as parents. They might make a few mistakes. You did too. But step back. Give them a chance. Okay. Now that your grandparents or your parents have stepped back, you primary parents have you got the ball. The ball's in your court. Okay, they step back. They've let you. They want to stay. They want to help. They want to, but they're stepping back. They're going to let you. They're going to let you make your mistakes. They're also going to let you have your successes. Okay. Ball's in your court. So now, what do you do? Well, the first child is that's an experiment. That's a work in progress. Okay? It's a work in progress. You know, you're trying to kind of get along and do things right and establish your role as a parent. And in that process, especially with the first one, you tend to kind of have a few snags. Some things happen that maybe you think shouldn't have happened. Little Johnny, you know, gets into something. or little Susie gets into something that she shouldn't have been into, or she does something she shouldn't have done, or she says something she shouldn't have done, and all of a sudden, you're called upon as a parent to react to that. Well, don't overreact. Don't overreact. You know, discipline is necessary, but if you, man, you can get out of hand. You hear about all kinds of horror stories about parents who lost it. They got angry. They weren't in control. They did something they shouldn't have done. Don't overreact. Here's an example of my overreacting. And you know what? I was saved by the grace of God that I didn't do something stupid. Anyway, this is my oldest son. He's about, he's probably maybe 10 years old. And he's got a little sister that's 6 or 7. He's got a little brother that's 2 or 3. And we've been impressing upon him. You big brother, you know, you kind of help your brothers and sisters, do kind of teach them, guide them, you know, do what's right. You're a big brother, okay? I come home from work. I work construction. And I'm hot and I'm tired. It's a summer day and I'm sweating and I'm wore out. And my wife comes up to me. She says, "I cannot believe what that Kevin did today. I'm just so mad at him." Well, we have a son named Kevin. That's you know, we have a son named Kevin. And I'm thinking, well, what did he do? You know, why are you so upset? Well, I had a soda pop on my desk at school, and he was in there with me, and I left the room for a minute, and when I came back, I was going to get a drink. My soda can was empty. It was empty. He had drank my pop. Kevin had drank my, and I told him, I asked him, "Did you drink my pop, Kevin?" "Oh, no, I didn't." "No, I don't know anything about it. I don't know what happened to that pop." And it just set her off. She was just so upset that he would drink her soda and then lie. Oh, that. Just lie about it. Said, "No, I didn't drink it." Well, at this time, she's gone home from school. She's home. She's upset with the things that have happened at school. And so I come home from work. I'm all hot and sweaty and tired. She tells me this. She enlightens me as to what Kevin has done. And, you know, I'm not too upset about it. "So he drank your pop. I mean, you big deal." It gets better. So now I'm thinking, well, you know, he drank my pop, and then he lied about it. He lied. He bold-faced lied to me. Now we're getting into something that's not going to be, no, that's not good. We're not going to put up with that. Well, fortunately, my 10-year-old son, Kevin, was out playing somewhere away from home when I arrived at home. And I say fortunate because I'm thinking, all right, well, I'm going to deal with this. He drinks some pop, but he ain't lying to his mother. He's supposed to be teaching my kids what to do. He ain't doing that. I ain't putting up this at all. He is going to pay dearly. Dearly he's going to pay. But meanwhile, I'm stinky and sweaty and tired. So Kevin's not there for me to just waylay and... So I go up and I'm taking this shower and cooling down a little bit. And I'm thinking about this. Man, he lied to his mother. And all of a sudden, the light bulb comes on. Kevin. You know, I bet she's talking about that student she's got at school that's been a problem. Kevin Patton. So I take my shower and I get out and I get cleaned up and I get dressed and I go down immediately and search her out and say, "Are you talking about our Kevin or Kevin Patton?" "Well, Kevin Patton, of course. Who do you think I'm talking about?" So, that's what I'm talking about by not overreacting. I was so blessed by the Lord that my son didn't happen to be home. He was out playing. I wouldn't have been asking him no questions. I'd have been telling him, "You lying, no good. And you don't lie to your mother." And I'd have been waylaying him. Okay? Don't overreact when you're disciplining your children. Discipline should always be out of love. Whom the Lord loves, He chastens. Correction, there's discipline. That's great. That's perfect. That's exactly what you need to do. But do it with the idea that you're doing it for the benefit of the child and for the correction of the child and because you love that child. Don't overreact. Don't allow your temper to get in the way. Don't allow yourself to become misinformed. That's happened. My son is now 36 years old. That's 26, 27 years ago that happened. But I think about it often. How lucky I was that he was not at home. Because I was mad that he was lying to his mother. Soda pop, I don't care about. Okay. Bring up a child in the way they'll go, where they should go, where they should go. Bring up a child in the way they should go. Train up a child in the way they should go. That's in Proverbs. And they'll not depart from it. They'll follow that path. They won't ever forget it. Teach by example. Don't tell your kids how to live and then do the opposite thing. Teach by example. Okay, let's go on. Remember the song J-O-Y, little kid's song J-O-Y, J-O-Y, J-O-Y? Okay, you all know that. Okay. Jesus first, yourself last, others in between. Jesus taught in the Gospels that we should do unto others as we would have them do unto us. Commonly known as the Golden Rule. What you want, what you, Kenny, want, what you want is never as important as what God wants for you. What you want isn't always the best thing for you. You know, when you pray to God, ask Him for things, and He doesn't always answer the way you'd like for Him to, that's because He loves you. And the things that you want aren't always the best thing. I wanted to go overseas and take that dream job. I didn't consult the Lord about it. I just did it. That was, oh yeah, that's great. Well, it's not always about you. It's often not about you. One of my shortcomings probably is what we're going to talk about here a little bit. When you're in social settings or when you're in, maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe, well, let's start off with, we'll say that. When you're in social settings, a lot of times we enjoy talking about ourselves and telling people about, you know, what's going on in their life, what we're doing, what we're saying. Well, it's not all about us, is it? So we need to, as the teaching says, be swift to hear, slow to speak. And certainly slow to get angry, slow to wrath. When you're in social settings, take an interest in what other people have to say. Take an interest in what interests other people. As I say, it's not all about you. Okay, now in social settings, that's the case. Well, what about at home? You know, you need to take an interest in the other people in your home. Take an interest in what interests them. Don't allow them to get you all fired up, like my wife got me fired up over my son. But take an interest in what they have to say. It's not all about you and what's important to you. Listen. listen to people and take an interest in them. Keep your priorities straight. We're going to run out of time. I'd give you a math lesson, but yeah, we got a marker up here. Okay. As I said, it's not all about you. When you're a Christian, who's number one in your life? Who should be number one in your life? Jesus is. Okay. Jesus is number one in your life. That means he's more important than you are. Is that right? He's number one. That's the most important. Okay, well, if Jesus is number one, well, let's just do this a pie chart. It'll be easier. Okay? Jesus is number one, so that means he gets a bigger share. This is Jesus. And this is you. Okay? We'll just say for intensive purposes that the least Jesus should ever have to do with your life is 51%. That puts him in charge. That gives you 49. Okay. But then as you grow and you decide that you want to share your life with someone, Jesus first, others in between. Okay, so you're going to share your life. You're going to share this 49% that you got. Okay. Well, let's say that kind of split down the middle, but nah, she or he is more important than you. So they get 25, you get 24. You're down to 24% now because others have taken over. Okay, now if you decide that you have some friends or some family that's important to you and you want to allow them some influence in your life, part of this 24% more is gone. And then you have kids that are important to you and you have to share your life. What I'm saying is it's not all about you. It's about everybody who's important to you in your life. And no matter wife or husband, son or daughter, friends, relatives, they all come out of this part. They don't come out of this part. Jesus is number one in your life. He should never be less than 51% of your priorities. He's responsible for your blessings. He's responsible for your eternal home, making that possible for you. Don't forget to thank Him for that. Remember to give thanks for all your blessings, especially for the blessing of His sacrifice in your behalf, making it possible for you to have a home in heaven. I'm going to skip off part of this to try and get some of these things in. I'm a contractor. I've been a contractor all my life. I'm going to rush through this all my adult life, let's say. I worked through the Carpenters Union for 10 or 11 years, but basically from about 1979 till the present, I've been in business for myself, or was in business with myself and my brother for a while. But the last 30 years, been in business myself. Let me tell you this: if you're in business, or if you're planning on going in business, or if you even think you might go in business at some time in your life, before you do, consider the cost. Consider the cost of going to business. My dad told me it'd take a lot of time. And it does. Oftentimes it takes too much time. Too much time. You know, if you're going to go into business, consider the time that it's going to take out of your life to do that. Consider the way you're going to run your business. And I'm going to tell you, as a Christian, from the word go, if you do go into business, decide that you're going to run your business honestly. Decide you're going to run it with integrity. Decide you're going to be forthright with it. Decide you're going to be legal with it. And I'll guarantee you, if you do those things, you're going to have a successful business. You're going to have a successful business. But if you've measured the time that it takes and qualified that, made put it into the proper perspective, given it a proper priority, if you've decided to run your business with integrity, with honesty, with respect, and have a good reputation in your business, you're going to be successful. It may or may not make you a wealthy person, but you're going to be successful because you're running that business the way Christ would have you to run it. You're following His example. You're living the Christian life. And that business will become a part of your life. Well, we're going to answer for the things done in the body. Whether they're good or whether they're bad, we're going to pay. We're going to answer. So if you're going to be in business, decide you're going to run a business that's going to be appropriate. One that's going to let you live your Christian life and be successful. I guarantee you won't be sorry if you run your business that way, even if you go broke. And I've come pretty close a couple times. Okay. Speaking of being broke, don't be surety for somebody else's debts. You know, this practice of people needing something right away and when I get my dad to co-sign or I get my wife to co-sign, my brother to co-sign. That was done for me, and I've done it. I've done it for a couple times. But I'm telling you, now I wouldn't recommend it. As a matter of fact, I'd encourage you not to do that. And the reason I'm saying that is because somebody that needs to have a loan co-signed or have you co-sign a loan for them probably really shouldn't have the loan. You know, we're in a mortgage crisis because so many people got loans that they had no business getting. I don't know whether it was somebody's co-sign or not. Now, you're going to make your own judgment on that. But it's my advice to let a person stand alone. If you want to help them financially some other way, I'm not saying anything against helping a brother out. But I'm just saying I think that it's best. And even Solomon agrees with me. Don't be surety for another man's debts. It's just not a good thing. I've had it work out well. I've had it work out not well. But in any case, I think that person can be benefited by standing on their own. And it's just like that thing I was talking about grandparents. You know, back away. Let them stand on their own a little bit. Yeah, if they need some help, I guess you can let them know that you're able and willing to do that, but give them a chance to stand on their own. Okay. Kind of related to that, don't be afraid to use your talent. Don't be afraid to stand on your own. Okay? You know, remember the parable of the talents? 5 talents, 2 talents, the 1 talent. 5 talents does great, doubles it, increases it. 2 talents, uses his talent well, he increases it and gets his master 2 more. We got the other one over here that's got 1 talent. He's got a talent. He's got an asset that he has been entrusted with. He's been given an asset by his master. You have been given assets by your parents. You've been given assets by the Lord. Don't be afraid to use that talent that you've been given. The guy with 1 talent, he was afraid. And so he went and hid it. He didn't do anything. He didn't even try. And he was condemned for that. Don't be afraid to use your talent. You can stand on your own lot. You learned to ride a bicycle? Yeah. You learned to drive a car? Sure you did. It's because you weren't afraid to try it. Okay? Use your talent. Don't be afraid. Revelations 20:8, the fearful and the unbelieving and the abominable, along with murderers, whoremongers, sorcerers, idolaters, liars, shall all have their part in the lake of fire. Don't be afraid to use your talent. Fearful people are going to go to hell. Okay? We've all suffered loss. If you haven't, you will. People live and people die. Some of you have lost maybe a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle. Some of you have lost a parent. I have. I've lost both my parents. Of course, when you get to be in the 60s, that's pretty common. I lost my dad when I was, I'd been in 85. I don't know, that's 30 years ago. I was somewhere in my 30s. It was hard on me. I was down on a construction job, 60 miles from home. Middle of the afternoon, I got a call. Said, Kenny, you need to get home. Dad's in bad shape. He's in the hospital. Had a heart attack. You need to get home. So I closed up the job, shut everything down. I'm the main contractor there, so I've got to shut the job down. It takes me 20, 30 minutes, and I book for home. I'm 60 miles away, so it's an hour and a half before I get there. Well, when I get there, Dad's gone. He's dead. He's laying there in the hospital bed with a sheet over him. The only reason they haven't taken him out is because I hadn't gotten there yet. And it was hard on me. It really broke me up. Well, come to find out, he was dead when they called. I never had a chance to say goodbye. So loss is hard. You lose a son or a daughter, I don't know. I hope I never experienced that. But it was hard losing my dad. It was hard losing my mother, but there I was there. I had the chance to be there. When you lose them, you know, it's like, well, I didn't get a chance to say goodbye. I didn't get a chance to hear any last words. I didn't get a chance to tell him I loved him. Well, someday, if I live my life the way I ought to be living it, if I keep the Savior close to my side, I'm going to get to tell him hi someday. I'm going to get to tell him hello to him. Okay? If I finish my course, if I keep my faith, there's going to be a crown of righteousness laid up for me. Not to me only. Each and every one of you that love the appearing of the Lord. Let me ask you this question. Are you a short-term thinker or a long-term thinker? When you think about things, you think, okay, well, let's see, tonight, when we get out of this meeting, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to go there. Tomorrow's Monday, that's Memorial Day. Maybe I'll go to the cemetery. Maybe I'll go to a picnic. Maybe I'll go to the lake. Maybe I'll spend the day with the family. Mark, what are you going to do tomorrow? What are you going to do the next day? Okay. All right. Next day. Okay. All right. Well, what are you going to do next year?
Pray you get there.
Okay. Well, if you're a short-term thinker, you're thinking about these things. Okay? What I want to encourage you to do is be a long-term thinker. You know, we are really caught up, and it's easy to get into the point of being a short-term thinker because, you know, I've got a home down here in Ottawa. It's out, just the edge of town. Some of you have been there. Maybe some of you haven't been, but most of you probably haven't been. But anyway, I've got a home out here, a residence, a place that I live. But that's not my home home. That's not my home home. That's just a place where I'm at until I'm no longer on this earth. And so when I think about what I'm going to do in my life and how I'm going to spend the next day or the next week or the next year, I need to be thinking beyond the short term. I need to be thinking long term. That's what I've been talking about. Mates, dating, think about long term. Think long term. Don't think, man, she's cute. Boy, he's handsome. I'd like to. That's short term thinking. I had curly hair. Remember? Okay. Think long term. Long term. Beyond my curly hair being gone now, think long term, and you'll be successful. I just want you to be encouraged to do that. I want you to think about that tonight. I'm running past, but I'm sorry. Think about and study what Solomon says. I'm just Kenny Morton. I don't have much insight, much wisdom at all. You study Proverbs, you study the Ecclesiastes, you'll get some words of wisdom that'll lead you through. I got some advice for you, mistakes I've made, but the main thing I want to encourage you to do is think long term, and you'll be successful. Okay, that's the message I want to leave. If you have a desire to begin your life for Christ, you can do that too. It's a short-term thing to begin your life. It's just a long-term thing to continue and be faithful unto death so that you can have the kind of life. We encourage you to come forward and start your life with Christ if you haven't.